Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, BBS family. Thank you so much for tuning in to Satsang tonight. I'm Shisada, and I'm joined tonight by some of my favorite people. We've got PLA Yen and Tim and Megan, and Justin is with us tonight as well. We have a title for Justin now. So he's our social marketing director. Yay! So we're thrilled to have him with us tonight as well. He hasn't had a chance to sit in on the radio program, and I thought it would be nice for him to be here and see what it is we're doing. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. So I'm going to ask you all to take a deep breath. I'm going to clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring past knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one tube of light to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to those of you listening tonight and in the future on our archives. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Good. Come on back. Let's get started. We had a really nice session here in Charlotte a few minutes ago. Let's see if we can work that same magic here. I just wanted to say this because I didn't have a chance to literally come in from the other room and write it down before we started. So I had no intentions on starting with this, but I want to say it while it's still present in my awareness, which is that light casts no shadow, okay? From a very scientific place. Light itself casts no shadow. What is it that casts a shadow? Something that's in resistance to the light. Is the shadow real? If the resistance falls, does the shadow remain? No. And you are that light. Not the you think of as you. Not the personal self, not the body. The body casts a shadow, doesn't it? But your essence is the light. It has no shadow. It has no shadow. However, as soon as identification takes place, identification with the body, identification with all the beliefs, all the concepts, every one of those creates resistance. It creates resistance to that which you are, resistance to the light. And it is that resistance that creates that shadow. Which we can liken to the world itself. It's really a profoundly beautiful analogy that just hit me when I left our office and came back in. It's the resistance that creates the shadow. But the shadow is nothing other than the absence of light. It's not a thing. It's not tangible. It's not something you can grab hold of, you know. And so in our session in Charlotte tonight, I started out kind of from a space of if you've listened to me enough, you know, I love the Bible verse where they're talking about walking through the valley of the shadow of death, because it's such the perfect metaphor for what you have to do to walk off the life-death cycle. Why is it that in that particular passage, he says, you know, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I am not afraid, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Why? Well, because that's the walk. That is the spiritual path. The shadow of death isn't anything to fear. It looks scary, but it's not real. And the shadow of the valley of death, the valley of the shadow of death, is a concept built out of resistance. And it's the resistance from the identified level of consciousness that then creates fear, that keeps us in this place of repulsion where we don't want to do it. We want to skirt it. I don't want to go down through the valley. I think I'm going to, you know, we'll take the rim around it. It'll be a longer path. It will be less treacherous, but it will be less difficult right now. Never mind what it is in the long run. Mine never thinks that way. It's all about what it is right now. Yeah, walking into the valley of the shadow of death. Scary. Hard. Takes courage and commitment and perseverance. But when you see it for what it is, and you know that the shadow itself is divine and is showing you the only thing you need to wake up, of course you would feel that you would be comforted, for thou art with me. Well, of course. Is there anything that exists outside of God? No. And again, it's only our concept that you can be separate from that that leads you to a space where you are fearful about anything. There's nothing to be afraid of out there. Nothing can hurt you. You understand that? Is it true that something could hurt the body? Well, sure. Is it true that something could hurt your sense of feelings? Sure. Are those you? No. Aren't now, never have been, never will be. Nothing can hurt you. Nothing can touch you. Doesn't matter what has happened. It doesn't matter what's going to happen. Doesn't matter what's happening right now. You remain as you have always been, beginningless, endless, formless, single, being, knowledge and awareness and bliss. Regardless of what you are experiencing, that's what you are. That never changes. It's never been touched. It never could be touched. It's impossible. It's just like the light that shines unimpeded, and then something comes to block its path. Does the light stop shining just because a shadow is cast? No, it doesn't. And as soon as the resistance is removed, the light's right there, isn't it? No delay. It's immediate. So that's you. That's the Christ within you. It's there. Your experience is the shadow. You don't experience yourself as the light. It's there. And as soon as the resistance is dropped and every one of the single little valences or the roles that you're identified with, each one of those allows another ray of light to then come shining through. Kind of like if you're standing on the back side of you're standing at a shooting range and you're on the back side of the target, which is probably not where you want to be standing. But let's say you're on the back side of the target. And so all you see is, you know, the lights behind the target and you've got this dark thing in front of you. Well, every time a bullet goes through the target, what do you see? You see a pinhole of light. And so imagine you're doing dissolution work and what's going on is you're the one shooting the bullets through that piece of paper and more light is coming through, more and more light is coming through. The light was always there. You just couldn't see it. And so the belief that's taken on is that because I don't see it, that means it's not there. Well, it's not accurate. It is there. And you are that. So I'll give you another analogy that came up during our session that I'd never seen before. We'll take again the actual you and then the false you, the personal self, lower mind, ego, all of it. Okay. So there's a buoy out at sea and choppy seas. And when you look at the buoy, what is the buoy doing? It's bouncing around, reacting to the cause, which is the water and all the water movement. And what is the effect? Well, the effect is that the buoy is erratic, unstable. So that's the personal self. That's the personal self. The personal self reacts to the stimulus. In this case, choppy ocean waters. It reacts to the stimulus, personal self. There's no choice there. Reaction doesn't come from choice. Reaction comes from patterning. However, if you follow the line of the buoy all the way down to the ocean bed, what do you find? You find a very different situation. At the very bottom, it's stable. It's unwavering. It's not moving. And that's you. That's you. You are that. You are the center point. You are the still point that has become identified with what's going on at the top of the water. And not only have you become identified with it, you've also become identified with blaming, being dissatisfied with yourself as being erratic on the top of the water, and then blaming the water. But it's still the water down at the bottom where you reside. But you can't see it because all your focus is at the top. It takes a lot of energy to keep your focus there. So you live in a world of cause and effect, and cause and effect isn't real. Cause and effect is a construct of the mind. In the eternal now, the one moment that is now, there is no cause or effect. In order to be cause and effect, there has to be time. There has to be more than one moment to be cause and effect, you see. There isn't more than one moment. And the mind creates its sense of linear time out of pulling out of its database experience, pictures of past experience. And it uses those pictures to project pictures of what it thinks will be future experience. And that creates its sense of linear time, where you move from a past through a now and ultimately will get to a future that you never can experience, because every time you think you will experience it, it is now. Impossible to experience it other than physically, other than you experience it every time the projection comes. You're actually sitting in it. You are sitting in the future. You are not experiencing now because your consciousness is at a different point in time. Future. So when you're sitting in the now looking at a checkbook with a certain balance, and you're looking at a bill, and what's due on the bill is more than the balance in the checkbook, you lose your sense of now because what comes in is the projection of what's coming. I can't pay my bill. And whatever that story means to you, I'm going to get in trouble. They're going to cancel my credit card. You know, they'll come and repo my car, whatever it is, lose my house. Oh my God, what am I going to do? And then a million stories come flooding in because the mind is a huge database and it stores everything. And it's very, very skilled at pulling out exactly what it needs to pull out to present to you through pictures so that you will grab onto them and make them your own. Turn them into your story. Make your identification as a separate being that much more real. But it's not true. There is only now. Every moment that ever was, every moment that ever will be, is all occurring simultaneously in the one now. When you are perfectly present, your memory goes to crap. I have students who start to get very concerned because they can't focus. They can't concentrate. They're not remembering things. Mm-hmm. And of course, that rings the alarm bells for the ego, who says, I have to be in control. If I can't remember, what am I going to do? If you're here now, nothing else exists. Do you forget you have children? Sometimes. Yeah. What exists now is what is in your awareness now, here. That's it. That's the only story there is. You see? And it's not even a story, because in order to be a story, there has to be a past and a now and a future. Oh, how does that work? It doesn't. There's no story in the now. There can't be. So what's in the now? Other than perfect peace, perfect allowance, utter acceptance. How can you fight something in the now unless there's a story that creates a need for fighting? And how can the story be in the now? So Megan has something to say.
Please do. This one always gets me because I think about, like, if I'm in a situation, so let's say you do have children and they're arguing with each other and you're standing there looking at them. How is there not a story if you're in the present moment? I don't understand how that works, like, because I've had experiences in the present moment, but I was not around people. I was in nature with an animal, just in pure bliss. And so I can see how you can experience being in the present moment in a situation like that, but not if you're a mom and your two kids are arguing and you're just in it. Like they're in your face arguing. So how do you be present?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question. And remember that a piece of that, we'll call it the ego, has to stay in place or else you just couldn't be here, right? Okay. And there are teachers out there who teach that there's a very specific amount of time that you can hold a pure non-egoic state before you disappear altogether kind of thing. So we don't get involved in that. It's really not necessary. But it's a really good question because you have to hold a piece of it just to be here, okay? However, the difference is you can function. You can be present. They're not present, obviously, right? It's all about what you did, and I saw that, and I remember when you did that, and you always do this, and it's the whole thing. So you can witness their story. It doesn't mean it's your story. It doesn't mean that you believe it, that you take it on, that you are now judging them and withholding your love from them, right? You can be clear here. And so you can witness that, and you can use the intellect. You can use it, right? The intellect isn't a negative thing, you see. Remember, in your dissolution work, you use the intellect to dissolve the mind, right? So it can be harnessed as a tool. And so you can focus your attention where it needs to be and see from a very clear space, a very objective space. You can see what's running. You see the backstory for each of them, right? You see where they're both getting tripped up. And now you can actually take what we would call right action, meaning bring forward what will be in everyone's highest good as far as dealing with the situation. As opposed to the mom who the kids start fighting, and then that triggers mom. Now she feels victimized because she's hearing the disruption there, and now she flies off the handle, so she's not rational, right? And so their story just wrapped around her consciousness, and now it has become her reality. Okay, go ahead.
So the piece then is not being involved. When you're involved, you're not in peace at all. You're wrapped up in a story that makes you feel all these icky things. But if you are looking at it from a more objective place where you're clear, you're not engaged, then that the only thing that comes to mind is me saying it as that is a form of peace.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, absolutely. You can be at perfect peace in the middle of utter chaos. Absolutely. Yep. Because it's not your story. So you witness the story. You know. And there's this aspect of you that can remember that Christ can be in the world, you know, functioning in the world. It just functions from a very different place. So you can move in and do what's necessary. Be a mirror for one of the kids if it's necessary. Maybe that's in their highest good. You know, maybe you've got a kid that the ego's sense of self-righteousness is out of control, and the kid needs a mirror. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the identification that would stop that from happening. Yeah. It's a good question. It's a good question because it's a very practical question. That's one thing I've always loved about this level of work is the practicality within it. You know, it's not just about kind of, it's not just about very lofty concepts. There certainly are enough of those. But it's about taking the concept and then grounding it and living it in the world, which has to be practical. If you can't live it in the world, what use is it, you know, to you? It's not any use if you can't put it to use, right? We're here to take higher understandings and ground them here. Live them here. Help wake people up. They'll see that there's more to it than what they've ever thought it was before. Has to be practical. You know, has to be. Has to be rational from that place. You know, and it is. Now, it takes a while before you get to the space where you experience it as a very rational thing. Because from the space of the story, from the identification in the story, it seems completely irrational. But there's a point at which it's the most rational thing to you that there could be. And everything else is crazy, you know. You can't not see it as crazy anymore, what's going on in the world. When you really see the patterning running everywhere around you, that is the experience. It's like, oh my gosh, like the whole world is crazy. And you'd be right. It is crazy. Because the world runs on what? Cause and effect. Action, reaction. That's the world. And that's what everybody's doing. Reacting to the external stimulus. Reacting to an internal stimulus. Same thing. Same thing. But reacting, 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 reacting. Well, there's no choice in reaction. You know? When you're at the doctor's, and your kid, you know, the doctor does their yearly checkup or whatever, and they come over with that little triangle hammer thing, and they hit you on that spot on your knee, and it makes your leg jump. Did you have a choice there? No. You hit the trigger point, and boom, it just moves. Well, that's the mind. That's it. It's no choice. Now, it hides very well, you know, so you think you're making your choice. But you're not. We covered that last week, didn't we? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. There was something else I said at the beginning of our Charlotte session that was really good. Right in the beginning. What did I do? Help me.
You were saying about how everything we do in life, work, being a student, everything that you work hard for it, and why is it that when it comes to spiritual work, we think it should be easy?
All right, so I guess you just covered it. I guess we're done. Take what she said. Okay. She's laughing too, by the way. Yes, that is what I said. I'll say it again. We'll say it again. Oh, it's so true. I love to pick on the New Age community. I really do. I love New Agers, but wow. They're so stuck and they can't see it. And this is a perfect example. So what I said to the group when they started tonight was, you know, how many of you would agree with me if I said to you that you do believe that, say, you're going to start a business of your own, right, from scratch, and your goal is to build it to a certain amount in a year, you know, to have a certain number of employees or a certain amount of profit or whatever it is that your goal is. And I said, would you agree that you believe that it's going to take work to get there, you know? And is that a realistic thing to believe? And everyone says, well, yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're going to start from nothing, someone's got to do the work to get it there. Okay, well, very good. Seems simple enough. Would you also agree that as a student, when you were a kid or whatever, you know, you had to go to school because you have to go to school. Even if you're homeschooled, you still have to go to school. If you want to be a good student, you want to excel in school, you know, barring being, you know, like a member of Mensa when you're five, you want to do good in school. So does it take work? Whether it's, you know, work studying so you'll do well on tests, or work making sure you get your homework done and handed in on time, because that's work too. Work to get up and actually make it to school every day. Does it take work? And everyone's like, yeah, it takes work. If you want to be a good student, yeah. Okay. Good. So, here's another one. You want to be in a relationship with somebody. You know, you meet the person of your dreams, you want to get married, and you want to be with them forever till death do us part. Would you agree that it takes work to maintain the level of intimacy that you would have in the beginning? Well, duh, right? Yes. Because people will tell you anything else would just be a fairy tale in this reality, to think that, you know, you're going to meet the right person, you're never going to argue, you're never going to have an issue. You know, he doesn't leave his socks on the floor, and you don't leave your makeup all over the sink, and, you know, whatever it is. He squeezes the toothpaste at the bottom, you squeeze it at the top, you know, all that. Yes, it takes work. Does it take work to be a parent, to raise healthy, well-adjusted children? You better believe it. Someone's got to show up and do that, because those little egos will run all over you if you don't. So show me an aspect of life where there isn't work involved. This is the polarized world, people. Of course there's work involved. You have to work to feed your body. You have to work to put shelter over your head. You have to work for everything here. Everything. You want a beautiful home? Someone's got to clean it. It's work. Because what happens if you don't do it? It goes to crap, doesn't it? Yeah. So why is it that so many spiritual seekers come into their spiritual path from a place of, oh, this should be easy? What kind of delusion are you living under? Cracks me up. If it's not easy, if it doesn't resonate with me, if it doesn't mirror my truth, one of my favorites, then that's just not right for me. Oh my God, wake up, people. If your spiritual path is not challenging you on a daily basis, you are not stepped up yet to do what you came here to do. If your spiritual path is leaving you feeling all rosy every moment of every day, you haven't challenged yourself yet. If your spiritual path hasn't led you to a space where you have experienced what it's like to feel sick from your work, feel achy from your work, feel like you can't put two words together to make sense from your work. If you haven't felt disoriented completely, like you're going to fall over. If you haven't felt exhausted, you haven't hit it yet. Because those are all markers that you are on the right path. It's going to take any sense of stability that the ego is trying so hard to maintain. It's going to just rock it to its core. It has to. We can't love and light our way ourselves through ascension, people. You got lifetimes of compacted, negative, disqualified energy trapped on a cellular level in your body that has to be released. How are you going to do that if you focus 100% of the time on love and light? How are you going to release that energy? How are you ever even going to recognize that it exists, much less get in there to release it? You're not. You're not. Is it true that on the other side of polarity, it's all love and light? Well, absolutely. Of course. But see, this is what happens. You've got people who take that for them is conceptual. You see, it's not their reality. We're not talking about ascended masters here. We're talking about patterned consciousness in the form of you. So patterned consciousness in the form of you can't take a concept, which is what it is, that everything in non-duality is love and light, is all love, right? It can't take that and then bring it here into the polarized world and function from that level. You see? It's going to function from the polarized aspect of that level. And it's a trap. That's where they've gotten so stuck. So stuck. And they're beautiful people. Beautiful, beautiful, heartfelt people. But they're stuck. You cannot run away from all of the negative stuff in the world. You can't be in denial of what's going on this planet. Look around you. Have you paid any attention this summer on how many animal die-offs there have been around the planet? Holy moly. It's terrifying. Millions. Millions. Upon millions of chickens in this country had to be slaughtered because of another avian flu thing. That's food for people that is not going to be there 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now. If that isn't disconcerting to you, there's something wrong. You're running away. You got to be in the world. You've got to be ready to face it for what it is. It's a mess here by design. It's a mess here by design because it's all here, right? All the beauty is here and all of the ugly is here too, equally. You can't just sit in the space of the beauty and keep pushing away the uglies, thinking that, you know, somehow by the grace of God, you're going to wake up one day enlightened. It's not how it works. And that's partially why, if you go back, you know, 100 years, the teachers out of the East were so focused on what you do with the body, right? Putting a lot of effort in, you know, all the things that to be a good, clean, clear vessel. Meditation and how you eat and, you know, all of it, what you do with your sexual organs, all of it, right? Because it takes work. Even that level takes work and commitment and dedication that most people are not willing to step up and do. Well, if you're not going to step up and just do one little piece like, okay, I'm going to quit smoking, right? If you can't do that, how on earth do you think you're going to do the rest of it? When it really gets hard, you think it's hard to quit smoking? Wait till you have to see the ugliest aspects of yourself and walk through that. Smoking's nothing, right? So there's a purpose for that. There was a really good purpose for that. And millions and millions and millions of people have dedicated themselves to functioning in that space. Well, that's good because it helped raise consciousness that much more for others so that they wouldn't necessarily have to do that piece, right? But sometimes it's still necessary. And sometimes it's necessary just for a short time. and then a person outgrows it. And when I say outgrows it, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you're better than that. You're, you know, it's not that. It's never that. It just means it served its purpose for you, you know? You took it and you worked it and you wrung it dry. And once you wrung it dry, it's, you know, it's time to move on. It's time to move on. New challenge. It's all, you know, you're going to challenge yourself all the way to the end. Believe me, you get there and, you know, you think that body's dying and you will. Tell me that's not a challenge when everything inside is like, I don't want to die, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. Right? Oh, yeah. It's like a, you know, caged animal. Primal. Reacting to the stimulus. Yeah, reacting to the stimulus. Well, something in you sees through it and stops giving it the attention that it's clamoring for, because that's what it's doing. Pay attention to me. I'm real. No, really, I am. And you're like, yeah, I don't think so. No, really, feel it in your body. Do you feel it in your body? I'm real. I'm like, no. No. No, I'm not buying it. And that's exactly what it comes down to. You're struggling with an addiction. You're supporting the addiction. Was it last week we talked about alcoholics? Was that? When did that come up? Was that last week? It was last week. That the whole, I don't remember, I don't think it was on the radio. It was in session. Okay. So Justin brought up, it was a great, brilliant point. So you have an alcoholic, right, who struggles with the addiction, and they join AA. And now, what are they? Well, they're an alcoholic for the rest of their life, but they're in, you know, like, remission. But they're still the victim of alcohol. You see? And so the story is still just as real. Whether you're drinking or not, it's still the story. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic. What is the difference? They're two sides of the same coin. It's still a story, and you're still buying the story. Honey, when you stop buying the story, the whole thing dissolves. You won't ever even need a drop of alcohol. It won't matter. You won't care. And, oh, well, you know, the medical community, it's a disease. It's a, you know, physical. Well, on a level, is it? Sure. From the place of identification, of course. But you mean to tell me that when Sai Baba was walking in form, if I brought him a fifth of scotch every day and made him drink it for 6 months, that he'd be an alcoholic? I don't think so. It's not a body thing when you aren't identified with the body. Why is it Ram Dass's guru could take that whole tab of LSD and it didn't even affect him? Because he's not the body, and he knows it. The body reflects the state of consciousness that it's serving. It's unaffected by things when it's coming from a higher level of consciousness. That's why you can pick up a hot pan and not react to the stimulus and drop it. You can witness the energy and not experience it as heat, just energy. Why is it people can walk on hot coals and not burn their feet? And they say, well, mind over matter. Well, kind of, but not from the space of me being the doer. And I just got myself in a space where I conquered the mind so that the matter wouldn't affect me. No, you dissolve the whole story out and it won't matter. It doesn't matter. The matter doesn't matter. Yeah. And you know what? In your journey, you'll experience that. You'll have times where you'll put your hand on a wall and the wall moves. And of course, mind kicks in. That's impossible. But you know it just happened. You'll be sitting and watching a wall wave. You can see the quantum field and you're watching it. All the particles. You will move to a space. I speak from experience. You can come out of meditation and all you see are particles. Particles. And then when a certain amount of identification with the particle field comes in, it solidifies. And you see the outside world. Quantum potential, right? That's all around you. Part of the holographic field that extends around you that you think is this, you know, huge amount of space. That's not. You've got like a 360 degree like egg shaped movie screen surrounding you. Your consciousness is projecting the holograph onto, and it makes you think that it's this big, and it's not. So at some point you transcend that. You see that for what it is. Potentiality. Particles. Particles moving in various ways. Some of them popping in and out. Some of them seeming to dart around. Some of them stationary, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But you see it. You see it. People would say, you're crazy. The eyes can't see that. Well, people who have had the experience, tell them that. Because it's not that anymore. You're not seeing through those eyes anymore. You see? So, what are you willing to do? How hard are you willing to work? Life sucks. You want out? Good. Get to work. What are you waiting for? Oh, it's too hard right now. I have a full-time job. I love that. How would I ever find the time to process? I have a job. Oh, poor baby. I'm so sorry for you. And then other students can carry multiple jobs and children and everything, and they process the heck out of their lives. Why? Because it matters to them. It's important to them, and they're willing to put in the work. Do they tend to see results faster? Yeah. Not any different than anything else, people. If you're going to run your business and you're not going to put in the time, are you going to see, you know, a big payoff? Or will it be in relation to the time you put in? I mean, it's pretty standard, right? You want to be an average student? Do average work. You know? You want to excel? You got to try harder. I don't know what else to tell you. And, you know, there's no judgment there. Maybe that's acceptable for you. Maybe average is acceptable and you're happy with that. You know what? If that comes from your heart and you're truly happy with that, God bless you. I think it's fantastic. But there are many people who would say literally and from a very honest place, I am so okay with average. I'm so okay with that. I truly am. I'm at perfect peace with being average. I mean, let's face it, the ego wants to be more than average. Of course it wants to be more than average. That's why little kids dream about being movie stars and, you know, the things that they see is above average. They want to be the president. They want to be, what else? The Pope, maybe. If you're a spiritual little kid. You know. Or even better, you know, I want to be Christ. Hey, that's shooting high. That's fantastic. If you're one of those, you wanted to be Christ when you were little, come and start doing work with me. I have a feeling you might be ready for it. It's good. All right. I give you a hard-driving message tonight, but hopefully in a fairly lighthearted way, which is what I aim to do most of the time. It's a good thing to think about. What are you willing to do? What has your view been on the whole spiritual thing, you know? And are you ready? Are you ready to take it past the feel-good stage and move it into the level of show me the truth? Just like in the world, you know, the whole movement, the truth movement, the 9/11 movement, the Illuminati movement, like all of it, right? There's this level of reality to the governments of the world that people don't see. It's been hidden from them, and they're starting to wake up to it. And oh my gosh, it'll rock your world. This isn't any different. Remember, microcosm, macrocosm, that's it. It's there in the guise of whatever that story is. But that's the story. That is the story. The ego recognizes there's something I can't see. There's something that's been hidden from me. Okay. Good. You get to the place where you recognize it. Come find me, because that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. Let's wake you up. You want to wake up? Find yourself a good teacher. Yeah? Do the work. Don't count on them to do it for you. They're not going to do it for you. They can't do it for you. Even if they could, they wouldn't do it for you. Why would they take that away? Why would they take that away from you? All the discovery, the rediscovery, the ecstasy of moving back into these states of your natural beingness that are so beyond anything you've ever experienced. Why would anyone take that away from you when they've had that experience themselves? Good heavens, no. No, you walk your path, every single step of it. It'll be so worth it in the end. Oh, this is so perfect, because our song tonight is called Pressing On. It's so perfect. I love it. So, yeah, I didn't know what I was going to talk about tonight, and there we go. And here's the song. It's about pressing on. Okay? Love you so much. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the meditation.
You are divine.